Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. In just the last few days, the debt crisis in Greece has gone from bad to really awful. Awful for Greeks who are about to feel the hammer come down on a standard of living they can no longer borrow to sustain. Awful for Europe and maybe the world as lenders look at overextended countries all over the place and begin to shrink away from feeding the debt. Contagion is the word of the week in finance. Ebola, said one analyst. This hour on point, the brutal price of too much debt in Greece, in Europe, and maybe even in America. You can join the conversation. Have you seen the riots in Athens? What would this country look like if we had to hack off 20% of our economy, of our standard of living, to deal with debt? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Like the contagion, economists now fear we will start this hour in Athens and work our way to Europe and finally the United States. But here's sound of school teachers in Athens just this last week cursing the government, calling reform measures there a fraud, saying don't put the price of debt on the backs of teachers. And here's another protester voicing anger at her country's financial problems in the same report from Associated Press.
Strikes are the only weapon that people can use to avoid shouldering the burden of a crisis they didn't provoke.
They didn't provoke, but the government borrowed and borrowed and borrowed, even lied about that borrowing for a while, just how deep it was. Now it's come out. Lenders really don't want to lend to Greece anymore. They need a bailout, and the hammer's coming down. Joining us first today from Athens is John Soropoulos. He's editor of Odyssey magazine, former editor of the Athens News, and a correspondent for NPR and the Irish Times. You can also read his blog on Greek political and economic affairs at thenewathenian.com. John Soropoulos in Athens, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. My pleasure as always.
The headlines in your papers these days are pretty dire. I mean, Greeks must see this really coming down on their heads.
I would say it's as bad as it gets. But then again, we don't know because every day in politics is now a very, very long time indeed. So things could change by next week even more, and things could get even worse than we now imagine is possible.
Greek debt accumulated to the point where this week it was downgraded to junk bond status by Standard & Poor's. The austerity measures are coming at you. You need a bailout and haven't got it totally nailed down yet. But we're reading all this stuff, John, about radio technicians halting news broadcasts. They're out on a strike. People rioting outside the finance minister, teachers with work stoppages. And then talk of a whole lot of cuts underway and to come in jobs and pay and pensions and all the rest. What do you see coming down the track for Greece?
Well, Tom, I think that the problem is the public sector. I think that the private sector is unfairly being made to look uncompetitive, which I do not believe it is. Salaries are not excessive here. Typically, entry-level positions garner salaries of about 700 to 1,200 euros a month before tax. That's very low by American standards, and it's low by European standards, too.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble with the Greek labor market is that in a population of 11 million, you have about 4.5 million active or inactive workers, but that's the size of the entire labor force. So you've got a demographic problem from the outset, which no one is to blame for. And of that 4.5 million, which is supposed to support the rest of the 11 million, you've got a million people working for the government or for local government or for publicly held companies, which means that the other 3.5 million workers are supporting that 1 million salaries.
Presumably, that cannot last. I mean, Germany and the IMF and everybody else are now talking austerity. They're saying to the government, cut.
Well, this is the problem. So my argument here is, Tom, that if the public sector really does trim back, if those 678,000 civil servants, plus the other public servants that take it up to just over a million, really do get trimmed back to figures that are more in proportion with the Greek population and that reflect, you know, Western democratic practices, then I think you'll see a big surge in the competitiveness of the Greek economy, because from what I have seen, the private sector is mostly competitive.
Maybe a surge to come, but not there yet. I mean, looking at this, John, and thinking about what austerity means, we've seen it in other countries, Argentina and others, over the years. Greece, it wasn't that long ago that Greece was not exactly an affluent country. I mean, there are plenty of Greeks who can remember donkey carts and little tiny carts in the streets.
Well, listen, my mother remembers staying alive on Red Cross powdered soup for a couple of years during the German occupation. She remembers people collapsing and dying in front of her parents' doorway during the very harsh winter of 1941 to 42, when Marshal Goering had sucked up most of Greece's available produce to the Russian front to feed German troops. And that was a winter during which at least 100,000 people died here.
But do Greeks have a sense that they may be rolling back? Not to that, but...
Well, obviously, therefore, within living memory, Greece has been through much worse, and people are a lot tougher than they make out. One particularly misleading aspect of the social unrest here is that it is mostly led by the left-wing parties. We have two communist parties here. They are very well organized. They are able to turn out large numbers of people on the streets in short order. They have infiltrated unions, particularly in publicly held companies. And so you've got a degree of activism that is out of proportion to what they actually garner in elections.
But for everyone now, John, this must be a blow to the sense of sovereignty and prestige and pride in Greece.
Well, that is definitely true. It is a huge blow to Greek pride and prestige because you've lost sovereignty over your economic management. You're being seen as the Achilles heel of the Eurozone. You're being accused of being a liar and a cheat. This is a description that doesn't fit many individuals.
And what about the sense of being captains of your own fate? Is there any of that left?
Well, no. I think increasingly, especially since the government called in the financial aid package to be activated in the last few days. The sense here is increasingly one of fatalism. Increasingly that we are on an inexorable conveyor belt of some sort, and that what will be done pretty much regardless of any last-minute maneuvering by Greece at this point.
John Tsiropoulos in Athens, editor of Odyssey magazine there. John, good luck to you and your country with its debt problems, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Joining me now from Washington is Sherazad Rahman. She's director of the European Union Research Center, a professor at George Washington University. Sherazad Rahman, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, John. Thank you for inviting me.
How bad is the situation in Greece? How would you describe it?
Well, it's quite bad, Tom. As I think you mentioned, I'd like to just go back a little bit. You mentioned that Greece was not an affluent country until not so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then John in Athens mentioned that they are seen as the Achilles heels of the Eurozone. And that's at the heart of the matter. There is some common discussion among economists that Greece should never have joined the euro. It was too early. They're playing in a very big rich boys club. And in this country club, you're supposed to hold your own when trouble hits. And trouble has hit in a very, very big way. Unfortunately, when the euro project was on its way, political momentum gave the impression that if you weren't part of the euro, your currency would be hammered and your economy is weak.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, Greece eventually joined with everybody else in 2002. Unfortunately, along the way, the impression and in reality, they have cooked the books along the way. And the Greeks, when they joined the Eurozone, believed they had arrived in the promised land and that the market would never really punish them or attack them for overspending.
But their debt has grown to what, something like 120% of GDP? I mean, just absolutely off the charts. We've got a lot of indebted countries at this point. But, I mean, the heart of the matter surely has a lot to do with their debt as well as their EU membership.
That's correct. And I think that what one has to remember is that the overspending is not just in Greece. Greece is just the small tip of the iceberg. The real danger here is contagion, and spreading very, very quickly. The Germans have played a very tricky game. They have tried until the very last minute to push for as many changes as they can to get out of Greece. But they perhaps have waited a little bit too long. Yesterday, Spain was downgraded. The next country is going to be Italy.
And we're talking that is downgraded in their rating by the bond rating agencies. That means their debt's going to be more expensive to support. They're talking about needing maybe $130+ billion just to deal with Greece. And I've seen numbers, Sherazad, that if Spain gets in this kind of trouble, it could be $500 billion. I mean, quickly
it'll be unmanageable. And you're right. I think one of the problems is no one knows the extent of the size of this package. First, it was 45 billion euro. Now we're talking about 120 billion euro over the next couple of years. And just to give you an idea of how difficult it's going to be for Greece, just yesterday, for a two-year Greek bond, it's costing them 16% to borrow. Wow. Versus the Germans, where it costs them 1% to borrow.
Wow. And this could hit Spain. It could hit Portugal. There's talk of it even leaping to the UK, not part of the eurozone, but nevertheless. Nevertheless, you know, I've heard financial analysts out of London saying we are not invulnerable to this.
That's absolutely true. And again, you know, you're talking about meltdowns of some big bond markets. Spain is really the key here. Spain is the fifth largest economy in Europe. And if it starts to go down, bailing them out will be somewhat unmanageable. And when Spain goes, you're going to see Italy go. And once Italy goes, the contagion will spread, even though the UK is not part of the eurozone.
This word contagion I'm seeing even in wire stories out of Tokyo now. So this is not just localized. And there's the U.S. watching all this with a lot more control over its fate than little Greece has, but a lot of debt too, Sherazad.
Absolutely, but I think you have to see where the debt is. And both of them obviously are government debts, but the impetus of all of this really is overspending and people unfortunately living larger than what their lifestyle should really mandate. The standard of living was raised in Greece, partly because they really believed they could live larger than life and never really pay the piper for it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Greek debt crisis hitting home for Greece and for the world. It is a brutal cautionary tale about the risks of too much debt. Sherazad Rahman is with us, director of the European Union Research Center, joining us from Washington. She's a professor at George Washington University, author of European and Global Trade and Finance and the forthcoming Corruption and the Persian Gulf. With us as well right now from Washington is Zanny Minton-Beddoes, economics editor for The Economist magazine. Zanny, thanks very much for being here.
My pleasure, Tom.
Does Europe have a handle on this? Is it clear it's going to get one? Germany's been very reluctant to really dive in and lay down the big bucks or the big euros. Are they going to ultimately have to do it, Zanny?
I think they're certainly going to have to do it, but I think one of the really big problems has been quite how incompetently the Europeans have handled this. If they had come up with a package for Greece 3 months ago, if they'd come up with an agreement on the kinds of measures Greece would have had to have taken, this would have been a much cheaper event and it would have been done with much less contagion. I think a large part of the problem is that people are panicking, people are extremely worried about Spain, Portugal, because they have no idea what's going on. They don't know whether the Germans are going to come up with the money, they don't know how much money there's going to be, they don't feel that anybody in Europe is in charge. And I think while Greece has very fundamental problems, Greece is basically bust, the whole euro-wide problem is spiraling out of control, in large part because there is a sense that nobody has a clue how to manage this crisis.
But in a way, you can't blame Germans for feeling like, you know, what the heck's going on here? We're bailing out Greece, and we know Angela Merkel's under pressure. She's got elections coming right up there, and a bailout is very unpopular among Germans.
Well, it is very unpopular, and it's easy to understand why the German on the street is angry about bailing out the Greeks who retire much earlier than the Germans do. So why the Germans understandably think, why on earth are we paying for their profligacy? But I think there's been a chronic lack of leadership in Germany because the Germans have kind of pandered to that rather than saying, which is actually true, that it is in fact in Europe's interest and particularly in Germany's interest to get this crisis under control. It may be tempting to say, you know, oh, let the Greeks go, who cares? But if there is a cascading series of sovereign defaults throughout the eurozone, then there is going to be a meltdown of the European banking system. The German banks are going to be in trouble. There's going to be a need to bail out by the German taxpayers of their banks. So they're essentially going to have to stump up money one way or the other. And the other point I think that German leadership hasn't really made, German politicians are not making, is that the Germany has benefited enormously from the euro. Germany benefits hugely from stability within Europe, and Germany would lose massively if there was a sort of cataclysmic collapse within the eurozone. So I think it's extremely short-sighted of them, of the political leadership, particularly of Angela Merkel, to sort of pander to and not stand up to this understandable concern by German voters. I mean, she needed to have, over the past few weeks, explained to them what the stakes were and what needed to be done.
Stakes for everybody here. Cascading defaults does not sound like something that would leave anybody immune, including the United States. But Sherazad Rahman, let's look at Greece for a moment. Germany is already making big demands, and the IMF too, and no doubt more to come
I mean, just as a kind of allegory here, it doesn't apply to every country, presumably, but what is Greece going to have to do in terms of cutting back to meet the demands of people who are now holding their fate in their hands?
Well, Tom, I think that, first of all, they're going to have to cut their public spending, and clearly the 1 million public servants are going to get hit first. But it's not just that. It's all public services across the board. They have been overspending. They're in for a very, very ugly 10 years ahead of time.
We're not talking about small cuts. I mean, we're talking about the kind of cuts that really change life, from what I'm reading, Shirza.
I think the generation that's the working class right now and the ones who are about to retire have fundamentally shifted their lifestyles, and it's going to go lower. There's no question this is going to happen. It has to. Look, the Germans, and you can understand their position in some ways. No one really knows what's going on. No one understands the scale of this. At one point, they were supposed to pay $8.4 billion. Now we're talking about Germany coughing up $33 billion. And understandably, Angela Merkel is under some pressure. And there's one thing that's lost here. The Germans take constitutional issues very, very seriously. And earlier this year, the Lisbon Treaty was signed. And it's very, very clear that no bailouts are permitted. And the Europeans, as usual, can find loopholes. And it comes into a form of something called Article 122, which says that you can bail out a country only if there's a natural disaster or a catastrophe. Well, I don't know if fiscal overspending is a catastrophe, but they're using that pinhole to go ahead and push this bailout through.
We've got a lot of callers here. Let's go to them. Waterloo, Iowa. Mike, you are on the air, sir.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I guess I would just I just wanted to make a comment on trying to talk about Spain in the same, you know, criteria as Greece and Portugal. From what I can tell, it's entirely not as bad for Spain as it is in Greece. I guess they were just slightly downgraded in comparison to being put into junk status.
Yep.
I'm just kind of concerned that talking about Spain while talking about Greece plays into like a certain kind of hysteria,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, speculation that could cause more damages by speculating or playing into hysteria. So
I know exactly what you mean, Mike. It's always this this tightrope between going that direction and, on the other hand, not acknowledging what is happening. Zanny, what about it? You're talking about cascading defaults. Mike says, whoa, let's hang on. Spain is not Greece, and let's not pretend it is.
No, I agree. Mike makes a very good point. Greece essentially is bust. I think that if you look at Greece's figures, and we've looked at them pretty carefully, it is hard to see how Greece is going to avoid at some point a rescheduling of its debts, at least pushing out the maturities, even with a big package. The other countries in the Eurozone are in a different position, but they have weaknesses. Portugal is the closest to Greece in that it has a big deficit, big public deficit, and a big government debt. Not as big as Greece, but nonetheless quite big. Portugal, however, unlike Greece, doesn't lie about its figures and has shown that it has been able to adjust in the past. So it's in a better position than Greece. Spain is in a different position again. Spain actually has a much, much lower public debt. The problem in Spain is that it's had this huge housing bust. It had a big boom up until the financial crisis, now a big bust. So it has almost 20% unemployment, very high budget deficit, and it has very high private sector foreign borrowing. It also has a kind of chronic question of how is it going to grow now that it's had this big housing bust? And what makes your debt sustainable is a combination of things. It's how big your deficit is. It's how big your stock of debt is. It's how fast your economy grows. And it's what interest rates you pay.
Mm-hmm.
And while I agree with the caller that there's a big difference between Greece and the others you could say are illiquid rather than insolvent, they could get through. They won't get through if interest rates are pushed up much further than they are now.
So the concern over cascading defaults, is that in the category of hysteria, or is that a serious?
I don't think investors are being hysterical. If there is a sort of chaotic default by Greece, it seems perfectly rational for investors to say, well, actually, what would happen if Portugal gets into trouble? Maybe Portuguese debt is more risky than we thought. So they push up the interest rates on Portuguese debt. That sets in place a kind of cascade that makes it harder for Portugal to actually achieve some sustainable debt level, so it makes default more likely. That then makes people think, well, maybe Spain is in trouble. And so it's not irrational to think from one country to another, but I think you're right that financial markets can kind of do this all very quickly and push up interest rates to what seem to be irrational levels. And that's why it's important, I think, to kind of for the Europeans to create a firewall between Greece and the others, which means both that the other countries should show that they're doing more fiscal adjustment, they're doing kind of structural reforms to make their economies more competitive so that they grow faster. But also I think the Europeans need to be prepared to make clear that they will assist those countries.
Build a firewall while they can. If there's time, the markets are pretty, on fire themselves this week about this. We've got a lot of comments online here. Here's one. We have to be careful how we characterize Greece. I'm sure many in China are worried that the U.S. economy will collapse and they'll be left holding the bag. People who live in glass houses there, says Richard. And another, the similarities of Greece to the Lehman Brothers story and its repercussions, very troubling. Expect a rocky time in global equities markets for a considerable period of time. And one more here, Larry says, coming to America soon. The only difference is that Americans won't go out in the streets and protest and strike. They will sit in front of their TVs until the cable and electric is turned off due to lack of payment. What about it, Zanny? What about a transatlantic leap here of these problems?
Well, I think there are two. The very real concern is that the focus of investors on high sovereign debts and high deficits is very worrying for all the countries that have high debts and high deficits, and that includes the U.S. However, I do think that the U.S., for two important reasons, is in a slightly different position. One is that in a panic, you go to what seems to be the safest asset, and it is still, in fact, U.S. Treasuries, where people go when they need to put their money somewhere. And you can't have people selling everything across the world at the same time. You have to buy something. You have to put your money somewhere. Mm-hmm. So remember after Lehman, when you know that we had absolute global panic, what was the beneficiary? U.S. Treasury bonds. So paradoxically, in the short term, if there is a sort of seeming meltdown within Europe, I would expect the short-term consequence to be actually, you know, lower Treasury bond yields in the U.S.
And maybe higher dollar. I mean, it's working for the U.S.
right now, it seems. Yes, yeah. And higher dollar. But that doesn't mean that there isn't an underlying parallel, which is that the U.S. is in an unsustainable fiscal position over the medium term. The U.S. has to do a fiscal adjustment. The U.S. has to either raise taxes or cut spending or probably a combination of both. Everyone knows that the current trajectory is not sustainable. The other big difference is that the U.S. economy is growing. And one of the reasons that the countries within the Eurozone particularly are in such trouble is that they have to do this big fiscal tightening, which depresses their economies. Mm-hmm. They can't allow their currencies to depreciate because they're part of the Eurozone, right. And they're chronically uncompetitive. Mm-hmm. The U.S. doesn't really have that. It issues debt in its own currency. It's an economy that has much better demographics. It's growing, but it does have a very big deficit and a very rapidly growing debt stock. And sure, if the U.S. did nothing over the next 5 years to try and bring down its deficit, there is going to be some kind of a, you know, sudden crisis in the U.S. And I think this should be a wake-up call to us that even though the U.S. is in a stronger position, these things can happen very, very quickly. Markets can go from being completely sanguine to being absolutely terrified in a very, very short period of time. And I think that's one of the most important lessons. And you want to kind of get out in front of that.
Right.
And so if you're U.S. policymakers, I would look at this and think, this is why we need to tackle our unsustainable deficit. We need to lay out what we're going to do now.
Which President Obama is talking a lot about this week. So different, but not at all immune. I'm looking here at a piece by Neil Ferguson, your fellow countryman, and I think Harvard prof now. This may be from your magazine. He says, a Greek crisis is coming to America. He says, U.S. government debt is a safe haven in the way that Pearl Harbor was a safe haven in 1941, and reminds us that last week Moody's Investor Services warned that the AAA credit rating of the U.S. should not be taken for granted. Also reminds us about Larry Summers, a big advisor, of course, in the economy to President Obama now. Big question before he was back in government, how long can the world's biggest borrower, that is the U.S., remain the world's biggest power? Let's go to Chrisula in Arlington, Massachusetts. Chrisula, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I lived in Greece in the early 90s, and I'm a Greek American, and I noticed just all over the country many people getting paid in cash. And I think the money was accepted with a wink, and I think a lot of that meant that they weren't going to pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like people were investing in a sort of diseased animal, because people were not being responsible. They were avoiding taxes. Many of the buildings they build are never finished, so they don't have to pay property tax. And I think another issue was the healthcare system. In order to have any kind of surgery performed in Greece, you would have to give the doctor which the majority of the doctors were working for the government, you'd have to give them what they call a little envelope, which is a bribe. And you could have a brain tumor, whatever the case may be, but you would have to bribe the doctors. So these are just a couple of things that have been going on in the country.
Some things not quite plumb there, Krasula, that you observed. And I see a lot of people writing about that lately. Shahrazad, you know this country very well. I mean, here's some reporting just this week talking about Greece's mismanagement, corruption, saying it's shadow economy off the books, the largest in the EU, bribing government officials, routine tax evasion, a national sport, Suzanne Daly says in the New York Times. What about it, Shahrazad? Is Greek unique in this kind of funky underside of its economy?
No, it's not unique. It perhaps goes a little bit over the top in terms of what it does. Corruption exists, and it exists everywhere. It's regrettable. Clearly, they can clean up, at least in their own public governance section and the government sector, for corruption. What happens at the market level is a little bit harder to clean up. And I think that, yes, it's part of the problem, but it's not the whole problem. Downgrading by rating agencies of a country's sovereign debt or the outlook really is based on future growth and the amount of debt they currently have and the ability to pay back. And reason, I'll come back to Spain, why Spain is in a different category. But what we are really worried about is, where is Spain going to grow? As Zaini mentioned, the construction bubble has burst. There's 20% unemployment. And Europe in general, except for the UK, has very rigid corporate governance and rigid labor markets. They can't restructure themselves as quickly as us. And so we are very pessimistic as to where are they going to eke out this growth. And if they can't grow, they can't pay back their debt.
Let's go to Michael in Toronto. Michael, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. I have kind of a two-part to my question.
Okay.
One was this situation foreseen when the euro was introduced? These are all individual governments, and prior to this, they would have their own national banks would have controlled this situation.
That's right. They would have acted on their own. That's one. And another, Michael, our time is short.
The second part is, how difficult would it be now for Greece to extricate itself from the eurozone and reintroduce the drachma? And then they might well sink. But can that be done? Is there a mechanism for our
time is short before the break. Let us pick it up. Zanny, how about it? Here's Wolfgang Munchau in the FT saying this is going to be the most important week in the 11-year history of Europe's monetary union. What about Michael's question? Was this situation foreseen? And what about Greece getting out of the EU or being kicked out?
Well, I think I'm not sure whether this specific situation was foreseen, but certainly there were people who were skeptical about the eurozone who said that countries will become uncompetitive, they will be forced out, this will not last, it will fall apart. A currency union without a complete fiscal union will not hold. So there were definitely people, a lot of people, in fact, on this side of the Atlantic who were skeptical. Now, can Greece extricate itself? It's difficult to foresee how, but I think they could. They could reintroduce the drachma and they could leave the zone. The point I'd like to make, though, is I don't think it's in their interests to do that, because if even given what they're going through now, if Greece left the eurozone, the yields on Greece would be completely shut out of all bond markets, wouldn't get any more help from the European Union, and even down the road, 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, the interest rates that it would have to pay on a drachma would be much, much higher than what they'd have to pay for the euro.
There's no easy path out of this crunch, and the question now is how far it might go. Zanny Mittenbeddos, economics editor for The Economist in Washington. Zanny, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
My pleasure, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Greek debt crisis hitting home for Greece and for the world. It is a very tough cautionary tale about the risks of too much debt. And it may not be just Greece before it's all over. A lot of concern this week in Europe about Portugal, about Spain. Here's the head of the OECD, Angel Gurría, saying it's not a question of the danger of contagion. Contagion has already happened. This is like Ebola, he said. When you realize you have it, you have to cut your leg off in order to survive. Shehrazad Rahman is with us. She's director of the European Union Research Center and a professor at George Washington University. Over time, she's advised the World Bank, the IMF, central banks in Turkey and Nigeria and Mongolia, you name it, Russia, China. Now she's watching Greece. You can join us at 800-423-8255. Let's get a call from Ned in Afton, Virginia, if we can. Hi, Ned. You are on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I have a very specific question. I'm glad your guest has expertise in this area. To what extent do debt-burdened countries like Greece and, in particular, the United States, rely on growth, growing the economy, to overcome their debt problems? I just don't quite understand what the relationship between the growth of an economy and the recovery from a debt problem is.
Well, of course, I mean, the money you make on growth is how you pay off the debt. But Shehrazad, how would you respond to that?
I think you're right, but I think partly it's also psychological. If the market sees that you're growing and you have a future for growth and a venue for growth and sectors are growing, you can borrow at cheaper rates. If all of a sudden we feel that there is no venue for growth, like we're seeing in certain Greek countries, in European countries like Greece and Spain and Portugal and perhaps even other countries like Italy, then all of a sudden people panic. Your credit rating goes down, investors panic, fear spreads, and lo and behold, we have what we have right now.
And of course, growth is harder to gin up when you've got a great big debt burden with higher interest rates that you're paying, I guess. That's surely a drag on growth.
Coupled with rigid labor markets, harder for corporate restructuring, and this is where the U.S. is ahead of the game. We might be deeper in the hole monetarily, but I believe we will come out of it a lot faster. I believe the Eurozone, and Europe in particular, the EU, is in for a very long, protracted recession with very long-term high unemployment.
Now, that has to matter for the United States. I mean, the U.S. exports a lot to Europe. I don't know. I saw figures recently, though, that our exports there have not grown at all, while they've grown 17% in the rest of the world.
Absolutely. In the medium term, if our largest trading partner slows down and is going south, it is going to impact us. There's no question about it. But it'll impact other countries, too, like China.
Yeah, of course. Let's go to Adam in Burlington, Vermont. Adam, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I was concerned, or I'm wondering, why, if people are joining to make a union, why aren't they putting more emphasis when it's time to join on maybe having a committee or just safeguards? I know we've mentioned that the books were cooked, but at the same time, you know, if I'm going to buy a house, you know, a house and live with 15 of my friends, I mean, we're going to have safeguards to make sure that everyone who's joining the union is obviously can hold their own and, you know, aren't making up stories of their livelihood and how they can end up paying for the bills and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a very good question. Why didn't the EU do that, Shehrazad? I mean, Zanni said before that people were warning they put their currency together, but they didn't unify fiscal policy because, I mean, that's really at the heart of sovereignty in many ways. But Adam said, why not? How could you think this would work out?
Oh, I've been following this for 20 years. Really, when in 1992 the Maastricht Treaty was signed to create the euro, it was never envisioned that Greece and Portugal and Spain would join. It was only 6 or 7 countries, and even Italy's faith in this union was questioned. It was only the larger, richer countries who were supposed to join such a union. But the political ball and the momentum began to fast forward, and lo and behold, 11 countries joined when the euro started, and some never should have joined. And I think that was a mistake and that we are paying for very dearly right now.
Do you think that Greece will end up in or out of the EU at this point?
I think that there's no possibility for the Greeks, at least voluntarily, to step out of the euro. They will not sink. They will drown. They cannot introduce a currency, even if it's their own drachma, which will not be hammered by the market.
If a contagion does spread there, does it end up ultimately on the American hook? I mean, the IMF has got a big role here. The U.S. is the biggest shareholder in the IMF. Could this end up in the lap of U.S. taxpayers?
I think absolutely it will. I think the Europeans are not equipped to bail out Spain, let alone if Italy starts to go. And the IMF is going to play a bigger and bigger role as we go down the road if this thing escalates any further.
Wow. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington, Maya McGinnis, Director of the Fiscal Policy Program at the New America Foundation, President of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. She served as Social Security Advisor to the John McCain campaign in 2000. Maya McGinnis, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on your show.
How do you see what's going on with Greece, with Europe right now, and what lessons should the U.S. take from it?
Well, I think the contagion risks should be taken very seriously. You know, there's some storylines here that unfortunately just apply to all countries across the globe, as well as many of the financial institutions we've just seen. And those are stories of a combination of over-leverage and lack of transparency. And certainly what we have here in the U.S. is not a healthy fiscal situation. We, like so many other countries around the world, know that we're on an unsustainable budget path. The recent economic downturn that we faced made things ever so much worse because we both had to borrow to help deal with the financial market crisis and the economic crisis here, and it left our revenues lower and our spending higher than it otherwise would have been. We're already sandwiched between running deficits and the baby boomers about to retire here. And so what we've had recently is the benefit of being sort of the reserve currency, and the flight to quality has brought money here. But it will not last indefinitely unless we, too, do something to get our fiscal situation under control.
If this were to jump the pond, if the contagion were to spread, if it were to jump to the U.S., what would that look like? How would we know, Maya?
Well, it's actually funny you should ask that. We're about to host a very depressing conference next week on what would a fiscal crisis here in the U.S. look like, because we all know that we're on an unsustainable path, but it's hard to see exactly how that would play out. What would the tipping point be? Would it be abrupt, sort of this herd mentality in markets that regularly takes place? And as markets become less comfortable that we're going to make changes, that could become an abrupt requiring of higher interest rates in order to attract the foreign capital and domestic capital that we have for to finance our big budget deficits. It could be pressure on the Fed to inflate our way out of the problem, and sometimes that sounds like an easy out. It certainly is not. Inflation takes a tremendous toll, oftentimes on the elderly population that lives on fixed incomes. Or it could just be a slow economic burn where unemployment stays high and wage growth stays low, and we basically chip away at our potential standard of living for years, if not decades. None of them are good scenarios, all of them arguing for making changes as quickly as possible that can be phased in more gradually so as not to derail the economy, which is still recovering. We're stuck between a number of challenges here.
Right. President Obama pushing through this new panel he's put together to try to get some ideas to do this, because, I mean, the Senate refused to set up its own panel. The political appetite has not looked real high, and there's been concern for a long, ever since end of the Bush administration, when this crisis blew up, that if we didn't spend, if we didn't get some, you know, spending going by the government to get the economy rolling again, we could actually get in a worse situation, Maya, where we didn't have the growth to pay off debt and to keep lenders satisfied that the future looked relatively sanguine.
Well, I think that question that we had from a caller a few minutes ago about the importance of economic growth is a critical one, because we've never seen fiscal turnarounds in the world which haven't been helped by having economic growth as part of it. And what we have to do, once the economy recovers, we need to pivot abruptly to dealing with our fiscal problems. What we probably should do is put a plan in place now. I mean, as quickly as possible. I hope this commission succeeds, but we need all decks on hand. And one of the biggest challenges we have is the horrible political and partisan infighting we have in this country. And really, I wish that politicians of both parties could rise above that and say, if we don't get ahead of this, it's going to be so much more painful. We need to announce a credible plan that would phase in gradually as the economy recovers, because you don't want to destabilize that recovery. We can't abruptly raise taxes and cut spending, which is ultimately what we have to do. We also have to be very careful when we do make those tough choices not to do so in a way that hurts the economy more than necessary. Tax increases, generally not great for the economy, but they're going to come, so we need to do them in the most thoughtful way that probably includes fundamentally reforming our tax system. Spending cuts, very important not to cut the most important investment areas of our budget. Our government investment is already too low. We spend much more on consumption. So we want to do this in it's already hard enough.
Yeah.
We also want to do it in a thoughtful way that doesn't hurt economic growth, because that can help us. It's not going to get, we can't grow our way out of the problem. But economic growth is always better than not having growth.
Washington Post says this week, the short term, this is for the U.S., the short term looks awful and the long term looks hideous on the debt front. I mean, is it possible that the U.S. could at some day somehow be if it doesn't deal with this, be looking at Greek-style austerity, you know, sort of Argentine austerity measures, I don't know, super cutbacks on Social Security and you name it, all across the board?
Well, the really scary thing about the situation is that if we don't act, we will be entering the realm of the unknown. So what's always seemed absolutely impossible, the U.S. is a much more vibrant, deep, nimble economy than many of these other countries. We are also dealing with more of a political breakdown than I certainly can recall having ever seen, where there's nobody who doesn't realize that this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the unwillingness to act, you sort of think, okay, there's always going to be the next election. If politicians keep telling themselves, we just have to get through this election, and this election, and this election, I don't know at what point something like that becomes possible. Obviously, at some point it is. It's not in the immediate future, but what is in the immediate future is the risk of growing interest rates, building ourselves into a situation where when we do act, we don't have time to do it gradually. We're going to have to make changes to Social Security. Nobody who studied this doesn't know that. But I sure would rather have them phased in gradually so everybody has time to prepare than to have to say, we are now being forced by markets to do this immediately. There isn't a single benefit to waiting until we make these choices. We need to do them in a way that's as cognizant of the importance of economic growth and as gradual as possible so people can adjust. And the longer we wait, the bigger those risks. I wouldn't say we're going to be Argentina, you know, this decade, but if we don't act, we will be entering into a whole different drastic and ugly scenario for the U.S. There's no question about that.
Shehrzad Rahman, I mean, looking here, Bill Gross, the head of PIMCO, they buy treasury bills and bonds all over the country, and he started cutting back, unloading his U.S. government bonds, I'm reading here, in favor of bonds from Germany and Canada and France. Michael Barry, the investment guru who shorted Wall Street, he anticipated the big meltdown, made a killing on that, saying recently that if you look at the U.S. Treasury statements now of receipts and outlays, as an investor, you see a company you might want to short. And here, Shehrzad, here's Ben Bernanke, Fed chief, saying, I'm quoting him here, at some point, the markets will make a judgment about really not our economic capacity, but our political ability, our political will to achieve long-term sustainability. We've been kind of beating up on and looking at Greece, but what about the U.S. on that front, Shehrzad?
Well, you know, I hate to create more fear and even be more pessimistic. I think regardless of any new fiscal cuts in this country, there are three undeniable truths that are happening. Number one, the standard of living of people who have retired or on the verge of retiring has permanently dropped and they will never recover. And
because of the market blowout last year,
that's absolutely
losses.
Right, over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And we basically, the underbelly of this economy got hit, and that's the American middle class. And so people who are slightly younger in the 30s and 40s, they might be able to recover by the time they're retired. But we have lost a generation here whose lifestyle has been affected. So that's number one. Number two, the public sector or the government's involvement in the marketplace is growing, it's increasing, and an attraction there, I think, is going to be very, very difficult. And so that's the state of life right now for us, that the government will be in the marketplace. And now whether we believe it creates more efficiency or it's a necessity is up for debate. The third and final issue is this. This country has never been equipped for what the Europeans have long been equipped for, and that is long-term unemployment. We've only faced short-term unemployment. We have policies in place for that. We have now emergency policies, people who are out of jobs for more than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to have to do some structural renegotiation for looking after long-term unemployment. And again, these are fiscal pressures. And so it's all about our outlook of future growth. That's where the pressure comes from.
Let's get one more call. Costas in Boston. Costas, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'll try to keep it very short. This is something that those of us from Greece that have been following things have noticed in terms of the structural problems of the country for a long time.
Mm.
But what was a huge problem, both in terms of attitudes and in terms of structural economic issues, became a crisis only very recently, even though the situation wasn't really that much worse last year.
Right.
And you could see that certain relaxation of rules that enables speculators to play with the Greek bonds happened just before this crisis arose in the fall. And I mean, right now, there was a recent set of articles in the Greek press that talked about a very large percentage of failed orders for bonds. Essentially, people were shorting Greek bonds and never actually eventually appearing with the bonds that they were supposed to deliver.
Right.
Even though that affected the price of the bonds because the transaction seemed to have gone through.
You say people, but I assume you mean banks. I mean, maybe even American banks for all I know.
I mean, some people were making a killing even though they didn't even actually even deliver, and that affected the price of the bonds.
Custis, we're almost out of time. I've got to take it to Shahrazad right here. Shahrazad, there has been talk about that, about big global banks, even Goldman Sachs, involved with, you know, the whole Greek finance scene and some criticism of how they may have profited from the woes.
Now, I think there are two issues here. Clearly, Goldman Sachs, even if they might not have violated the letter of the law, clearly they have violated the spirit of the law.
With Greece,
with currency swaps of sort of hiding really the extent of their debt. I think they were fully aware of that. But I think the Greeks, as with any other country, have to realize the realities of the marketplace. It's a very unforgiving place. Make mistakes, fear starts to build up, and you may be on the hit list. And when it hits very, very quickly. This is the nature of the new financial crisis that we face in a globalized world.
Well, you've both been very generous with your insights and your time today, and we're grateful for it. It's a rough education, but it's one it looks like we have to take on board. Maya McGinnis at the New America Foundation. Maya, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Shahrazad Rahman, author of European Global Trade and Finance and her forthcoming Corruption and the Persian Gulf, director of the European Union Research Center, and also their professor at George Washington University. Shahrazad, you're just terrific. Thank you very much for your insights today.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.